Be seated.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Pleased to see you today. I'm sorry it's not in person, but perhaps soon. We'll go to the first case on the oral argument calendar is Bastian versus Ryan. May proceed.
May it please the court, Katia Mayhew, CJA counsel, representing Thomas Bastian. On behalf of Mr. Bastian, I ask the court to vacate his conviction and sentence. I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. We are here today because Mr. Bastian invoked his right to counsel 7 times during interrogation. Law enforcement did not cease interrogating Mr. Bastian, however, they interrogated Mr. Bastian 7 more times over a 3-day period. The statements Mr. Bastian made during the interrogations were then admitted into trial during the prosecution's case in chief. The prosecution then read Mr. Bastian's statements into the, he read Mr. Bastian's statements into the record again during his closing argument. These outcomes diverge substantially from the holdings of the Supreme Court. Under
which part of this do you contend is the most unreasonable? Because the standard here is unreasonable application of the facts.
I would submit that it is the construing the facts after the first interrogation as an initiation of contact. Because what happens is that, as the court knows, the prosecution admitted that there was a constitutional violation, and it did so in the memorandum of law it filed after the evidentiary hearing. The remedy for this constitutional error is that the statements would be inadmissible during the prosecution's case in chief. The workaround to the suppression requirement was construing the facts after the first interrogation as an initiation of contact. The workaround itself is a violation of clearly established federal law. And this is why once a suspect has invoked the right to counsel, you need clarity in many ways. You need proof of initiation. You need proof that there was a valid waiver. We do not have that here. The trial court was tasked with finding the initiation. On that point, the trial court said, it's unclear why the detective entered the holding cell. The trial court itself did not find that there was a clarity when it came to the initiation of contact. The appellate court categorized the actions of law enforcement as tactics. It expressed its strong disapproval. Nonetheless, it concurred with the trial court and found an initiation.
You would agree that under Edwards, that reinitiation is permitted?
Yes.
So you're only quarreling with the state court determination of the facts?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You're only quarreling with the state court's determination of the facts as engaging in reinitiation.
I'm not sure that I would agree with that. It seems to me that so many of the different prongs of the statute are involved that I'm not sure that I would agree with that, Your Honor. Because Because the appellate court itself found that that law enforcement ignored Mr. Bastian's right to counsel multiple times. During the hearing, not one prosecution witness stated directly that Mr. Bastian initiated contact. And if you were, Mr. Bastian made a number, during the first investigation, Mr. Bastian made a number of statements. One of them is particularly compelling. He says, no, I want an attorney for the simple fact that I've been in prison already. And I'm not trying to get caught up in any technicalities or any wordplay back and forth and stuff like that. So this was one of seven statements he made during the first interrogation. The second interrogation, which is what's at issue, and this occurred like an hour and a half after the first interrogation ceased. Law enforcement went back to the cell, and Mr. Bastian obviously realized that a defense attorney was not being presented to him. He switched to asking for a district attorney. So this is obviously a man who says to himself, I want someone between me. I want an attorney between me and law enforcement. And that did not occur. So the state's adjudication of the issue is both contrary to, and it's an unreasonable application of a Supreme Court precedent. What we do know is that Mr. Bastian repeatedly asked for counsel. The appellate court found that law enforcement ignored Mr. Bastian's request for counsel. We have a bright line rule where you have to basically find initiation. The trial court could not find it. On that basis, it says it's unclear why the detective entered the holding cell. If the court does not have any questions, I would like to move on to the second issue.
Go ahead.
The Shacklin claim is before the court as a 2254E1 claim. The court will review it de novo, because there is no habeas deference. The prosecution did not produce the PCR pleadings in district court. Nonetheless, Mr. Bastian properly raised this claim as a standalone claim in his successive pleadings.
I thought this was an ineffective assistance claim.
Well, it started out as an ineffective assistance claim, but at the time Mr. Bastian proceeded on his own, he did not have anyone to review the record to the extent that I've been able to review it. He raised this, and obviously neither did this court when it issued the certificate. But if the court wants me to address it from that perspective, I absolutely will. Because what happens is that because Mr. Bastian raised a Shacklin claim, the related IAC claim marches along with it. So even though Mr. Bastian raised an IAC claim and a first PCR, he was allowed to raise it in a second PCR as well. So it was not subject under the procedural rules in Arizona, this claim is not precluded, there's no procedural bar.
Why do you say that?
Because the rules expressly provide that if a claim is of sufficient constitutional magnitude, it can be raised in a successive PCR. Now the rule has gone through a number of changes over the years. At the very latest, I think the court might have noticed that just last year, the Arizona Supreme Court revised the rules again to kind of make it more and more clear that this type of claim is not precluded. So in terms of in terms of them addressing it just as an IAC claim, Mr. Bastian has absolutely met his burden of proof, because there are three elements that the court considers. We consider the presumption of innocence, the right to counsel, the integrity of the judicial process. Mr. Bastian, this as a court note, is a proceeding that went on for quite a long time. Mr. Bastian went through a number of court hearings, and on the eve of jury selection, he is placed in shackles, and no one does anything about it. But Mr. Bastian explained, particularly with the and particularly as it comes to the right to counsel, this is a subjective analysis because it impacts Mr. Bastian's ability to participate in his defense. Mr. Bastian sets out in his successive PCRs that his attorneys knew that he suffered from a number of mental health disorders. And he told them these physical restraints are having an impact on me. They did nothing about it. It's not Mr. Bastian's position,
so, obviously. Counsel, so Mr. Bastian's attorneys knew about the shackles?
Yes, Your Honor.
But they didn't raise it with the trial court.
No, Your Honor. Mr. Bastian went
on to
tell—
Why is it not waived as an issue?
Because Mr. Bastian is entitled to due process. Because the court and the trial attorneys, as well as the prosecution, is entitled to accord Mr. Bastian due process. And also because the Supreme Court has says this is one of those things that impacts a person's fundamental rights. So here, whether or not the shackles were visible, that's not the end of the inquiry, because we're talking about Mr. Bastian's right to counsel and his ability to participate in his defense. His attorneys knew this, they didn't do anything about it, but Mr. Bastian has made his case and his successive pleadings. He explained what happened and how it impacted him. From that perspective, he's established that he suffered prejudice from these proceedings. I see that my time is almost up. I would like to reserve my 2 minutes to
thank you, counsel.
But any argument,
Mr. Riley.
Good morning, Your Honors. Andrew Riley on behalf of respondents. The district court correctly denied habeas relief on Bastian's Miranda claim because he has not shown that the state court's denial of the claim was based on an unreasonable determination of the facts, or that it was contrary to or based on an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law. The Arizona Court of Appeals cited the correct legal authority and found that although Bastian did invoke his right in the first interview, that interview and everything and every part of it was suppressed, that he did reinitiate in the second interview and asked the detectives to come in, and that he wanted to talk to them, that he wanted to waive his right to counsel, and then he voluntarily continued to engage with them over the next couple days in providing information. The purpose of Bastian wanting to talk to the detectives is he wanted to proffer information to obtain in exchange to obtain his release from jail and that of his girlfriend. He thought he would be able to do that. That's why he wanted to talk to the district attorney and detectives and that sort. And so while Bastian testified at the suppression hearing that he didn't want to initiate, he only wanted to use the telephone, or I think was his claim. The trial court, that was refuted by the detective's testimony, both detective's testimony and the transcripts of the interviews and the subsequent interviews. In fact, he confirmed shortly after the second interview, the third interview, early on in the third interview, that he did in fact want to talk and he wanted to keep talking with the detectives and provide them information to obtain his release and minimize his conduct in this proceeding. So the with that in mind, the trial court considered the evidence, made its credibility determination. It's plainly supported by the record here, and it was something that was affirmed by the Court of Appeals on appeal. If this court has any questions on that, I can certainly address them. But moving to the IAC of the debt claim, again, that's the district court properly denied relief on that claim because it is procedurally defaulted and without excuse. And in addition to that, the R&R found that in the alternative, it's meritless. There's nothing in the record that that shows that it's that the restraints were ever visible in any way or anything along those lines. You can't show prejudice. And because of that, it's just not a substantial claim and it can't be excused under Martinez.
Can you address this issue of Mr. Bastian asking for documents, record documents, and then not receiving them, and what relationship that may have to any of his claims here?
As far as the two claims here, I don't think, one, the Miranda claim was properly addressed by appellate counsel and is was adjudicated on the merits by the trial court. As far as the debt claim, anything that he, as far as the stun belt and the leg brace, everything that he had in his mind, he was aware of it. So as far as, he didn't need any documentation from the record to support that. He was restricted. His documents and his availability of those documents were restricted to him while he was incarcerated because he was investigated for a bomb plot. He had instructions on how to make bombs hidden in his legal mail. And so there was security issues with that. So whether or not those were, they were properly restricted in that sense. But as far as how it impacts this claim, I don't think it impacts the debt claim at all. Because again, if anybody knew he had these restraints on, it was certainly him, and he could have raised that claim and filed under Arizona the rules. All he needed to do was file an attestation or some sort of thing that he attesting to the fact that I was wearing these restraints, and then that would have properly he would have been able to properly raise it in that regards. If that answers your Honor's question,
it's not clear to me why he wasn't provided with the documents. Are you saying it was because of a security risk or because he just asked the wrong person?
It was because of a security risk. So he was originally provided the documents, but again, there was contraband being found hidden. Apparently an FBI got involved with a plot to blow up a corrections officer or something. There's that stuff's in some of the pleadings in the district court record, but he was a grave security risk and he had contraband hidden in his legal mail. And so DOC confiscated that, and it was a drawn out process for him to obtain documents, but he was able to get some of them, and he was able to file grievances and get certain documents in those regards. So his access to documents was more limited than it otherwise would have been. But that was because of the security risk that he occasioned. But even so, again, in regards to the debt claim, I don't think it has any bearing on that, as was noted by the state court district court and R&R and the district court. That, I mean, he could have raised the debt claim. He's the one with the knowledge of it, and certainly would have accepted that. He knew at the time of trial that this was supposedly an issue for him, or immediately after trial was an issue for him. So he could have raised it. So the lack of access to documents, I don't believe would have any effect on the debt claim or the ability to present the IAC of the debt claim. And if there are no further questions on that, as far as the uncertified issue, I didn't brief it, but it's not cognizable because it wasn't before the district court. It wasn't presented to the, so it's not probably for you all, and it rises out of a complaint of post-conviction proceedings, which isn't cognizable in its own right, and it hasn't been presented to state court in the first instance too. So it was procedure default on that ground. So I can answer any questions of that, but if not, I would rest on the briefing and ask that you affirm the district court's order.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear rebuttal.
Your Honors, I would like to point out that Mr. Bastian is not an attorney. He asked for an attorney during the during interrogation. He was not provided an attorney. He asked during trial, when he was being shackled and it had an impact on him, he spoke to his attorneys about it. Mr. Bastian does not have the capability to address such an issue on his own. I would also like to point out that Mr. Bastian did raise the debt claim at the appropriate time. He raised it in a successive PCR. The prosecution failed to give those documents to the district court. So the assessment that the finding of procedural bar cannot be supported because the district court was not given the proper information. And in regards to the uncertified issue, I would like to point to the court that 28 U.S.C. 2254B1 is implicated. There's obviously an absence of state corrective process for Mr. Bastian. State courts are tasked with safeguarding federal rights to the same extent as federal courts. Here, state actors fail to safeguard the constitutional protections due to Mr. Bastian. On his behalf, I ask the court to vacate his conviction and sentence.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments today. The case just argued will be submitted for decision.